Well, when Dennis asked me to speak, I said, yeah, I've been thinking about some things that I wouldn't mind sharing, and hopefully it will be meaningful to some of you also. It's always a privilege to be here in a home church. Yeah.
And I want to say that Roger set me up for that.
Oh, he did. That's a surprise to me. We have some interesting conversations at home sometimes about scripture and theology and so on. So last week, my daughter was in Los Angeles because her husband was presenting two presentations at the International Mathematics Teachers Conference. And so she had some time when he was at the conference, which is kind of boring unless you love math. And she went to the Los Angeles Public Library, which is the third largest library in the United States. And she sent me several pictures of herself poking her head through various shelves and displays. And the last one was a small picture of a book display, which the book's title was The Last Two Die at the End. And she said, I'm not reading this one. Well, many of the best stories that we have, or at least that I had in childhood, I'd read them through, and I'm not the kind that reads the end first. I like to see the mystery as you go through and see if I can figure it out as the plot thickens throughout the book. And most of the ones that seem to be famous books have the full revelation of whatever is happening at the end. These stories acknowledge the hero's claims as they go through. Most of them, if you have a claim to the throne, you don't get the throne until the end. So that after you've earned it, you get it. They acknowledge in the beginning that they're probably going to get it. If you can pull the sword out of the stone, or if you can kill the dragon, or whatever. The closing pages are when the person finally makes it to sit on the throne. Well, I try not to listen to the news most of the time. If you happen to hear, you can't get away without hearing some. This last week was the threat of nuclear destruction, floods, hurricanes, famine, a new outbreak of Ebola in Africa, COVID still, maybe an uptake again this fall, economic collapse. How does this affect me? Well, many people don't believe in God, and even if they do, they often forget that God is the ultimate ruler. He's sovereign. If you have an idea that nobody's in control in this world, you have a lot of fear. And many people have that position. In September, when the Queen died and most of the world was mourning her passing, seeing all those long lines of people waiting 9, 10 hours to go by and just give their last respects brought back some interesting memories from my childhood. As I grew up in Nairobi, which was a British colony at that time, the Queen made a visit once when I was about 5 years old. And it was interesting because we all had the little Union Jack flags to wave, and we were all standing in long lines alongside the street. And we were waiting to see the Queen's car, because that's about all we saw of her, a little bit through the window. And people back then were praising her, even though she hadn't been queen that long, they were praising her just as they did currently. They were using terms like benevolent, steady, true to duty, consistent, all terms that people appreciated her, terms that often we think of as terms that we could use for God. A ruler who seems to be just or fair. And yet, as the scripture in Romans says, what are we supposed to do when it appears that God does things that seem terrible? Or at least we attribute those things to God. And the idea of God's ultimate, intimate, infinite rule, it's not only hard to grasp, but it's difficult to trust, unless we first have considered all the other attributes of God: his omniscience, his omnipresence, his immutability. He's not just capable of ruling, but he is qualified to rule. God's sovereignty asserts that there are no limits on his authority to act. The Romans passage says, you know, if I want to harden Pharaoh's heart, I'll do it. God's throne is described as a place of worship and celebration, but it's also a place of trembling and awe. The wise will celebrate God not just as their father, but to their king, to whom they owe total allegiance. We all know the prayer that God taught us to pray: Our Father, which art in heaven. An illustration is given from a mother whose child was 3 years old, and they had just taught the child the Lord's Prayer. Unfortunately, the child didn't understand or get all of the words, so she shared what this child said. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be my name. My kingdom come, my will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And her comment was, my kingdom come, my will be done. Isn't that what many of us hope for as we're going through our lives? We want our own rule. We want our own kingdom. We want glory and affirmation. We owe our total allegiance to God not because we've sinned and feel guilty, but because he made us. Humans with absolute authority, you think of those people that we've had in history or currently, they command complete submission to whatever brings them glory, regardless of the harm that it may inflict on all of their subjects. But in the case of God, who is infinitely benevolent, it's only rational to submit to him. Now, in this world, there are always people trying to approach the top level. And they have many ways of doing it. I don't know if any of you heard this last week of the teenager who got into trouble over the chess match, the world chess match. Well, he technically did win. They said it was cheating, but he said, no, I just used artificial intelligence and practiced against the artificial computer and then learned the moves that the computer made, because he was making moves that I had never thought of. And that's how he won. He made a first move that his opponent just said, you've already won. That one move made it. He quit. So when you have human power, governments, leaders, it's all delegated, actually, by God. And I've thought of that many times when I hear of horrible things. I said, well, yeah, Daniel says God brings the just and the unjust and the basest of men into leadership on the earth's control. God grants authority to Babylon as much as he does to Israel. Sometimes he uses Babylon to goad Israel into drawing closer to him, leaving their idols, asking for forgiveness. In his trial, Jesus said to Pilate, you would have no authority over me unless it was granted to you. And Romans 13 tells us you should obey your leaders because there's no authority except from God. Those who exist as leaders have been instituted by God. That's hard to reason when you hear of current actions in North Korea or Russia. The question, I think, is how much does God control? If I want my own kingdom and power, how much am I willing to let him control in my life? Well, the Bible makes it claims that if there was anything that God could not control, then we have no guarantee that a single promise of God could ever be fulfilled. If there was one molecule that went awry in one of God's plans, what kind of a world would we have? Probably one like what we are experiencing. God needs nothing from us. He knows everything. He's all present everywhere. He has all power. No one exists without his sovereignty. He can do whatever he wants to. Because he has this ultimate control, he can work out all things for good, even those things that other people have made for evil. I was thinking this week of a passage where Jesus and Peter are talking, and Jesus says, get behind me, Satan. I have prayed for you because the devil wants to get you, to take you. Can you imagine what heaven's prayer list looks like? Did you know that Jesus has prayed for you? The question is, how often are we committed to our own sovereignty rather than God's sovereignty? And I think this happens in about three or four areas. Controlling our bodies, that's a big area. It's a stewardship issue, how we take care of our bodies, because our bodies do not belong to us, they belong to God. But if we maintain an unhealthy control, we become depressed because we can't do anything about our pain or our physical conditions. We can turn to eating disorders, or we can have an excessive fear about germs and never go anywhere because I might get COVID. Fear of aging. Oh no, I hope I never get old. Well, I don't want to die young, but yeah. When we desire an unhealthy control over our bodies, we can rationalize the huge expense for any kind of rare or odd treatment, whether it works or not. And ultimately, it impacts our relationships. Nobody wants to be around somebody whose main, oh, how are you today? And they have a long litany of everything that they've felt. Or controlling our possessions. We had an experience with that this summer when we went up to our property and going to get ready for the kids to come. We noticed that the front door is open. Well, we haven't been there in a year. We say, that's not how we left it. And so we go in there, and every drawer has been opened and turned over. Stuff has been strewn around, generators taken. They didn't find any of the guns, but they took the ammunition. They, you know, left the microwave full of old crusty pizza and so on. Well, we can get really upset, or we can say, well, that's the way it is, and clean up and say we still have the property and it's still, the water works, and it's still a nice getaway place. Or we can buy a new car and get a scratch and go ballistic because our possessions have been touched. But unhealthy views can lead to hoarding or expensive micromanaging of your finances so that you have enough to buy the next whatever it is that you need, whether you have 20 of them on your shelf already. Or let's look at a really hard one. Relationships. How do we control our relationships? Every human relationship we have is ordained by God. When does it get into trouble? When we want control, unhealthy control in relationships can end up being manipulation or abuse. Lesser problems, maybe we can't apologize for something we've done. We don't admit that we can make mistakes, that we're human. parents, church leaders, school teachers, all of those people like us who have authority over others. We need to preserve boundaries that preserve our relationships. When grandkids fight and they come to grandma and say, "He did this to me." Like Bill's story this morning, he broke my doll over his head, over my head, whatever. I broke my doll over his head, yeah. Can you ask, well, in this situation, who was being the kindest? That throws them off. They'll think about that for a little while. Control over our environment. That's a big, big issue right now. And perhaps it's going to be the one that draws the entire world together. Life is uncertain, but God knows the future. So when we reach for control in our relationships or in our finances or in our possessions, in our health, in our environment, my husband usually asks me when I get upset, well, what's the worst case scenario? And speaking my fears out loud sometimes about those issues, they seem very superficial and silly. And then I'm embarrassed and I don't want to give over enough authority to actually apologize at that moment. You know, it's hard. 1 Chronicles 29:11-12 says, "Yours, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty, for all that is in the heavens and in the earth is yours." That's why we sang, "This is my Father's world," this morning. "Yours is the kingdom, O Lord, and you are exalted as the head above all. Riches and honor come from you. You rule over all, and in your hand are power and might. And in your hand it is to give the strength to all." So says King David in the Psalms. Well, what can I control? What should I control? My words, maybe? My attitudes? How I think? And then I go to the scriptures where it tells us how Jesus thought. How long did he seek the highest place? He thought it nothing to come to our level, below the angels, to this earth. He thought it nothing to be equal to God. He was God, but he didn't claim for that. And I think when I have trouble thinking about where's God when all this stuff is happening, if he's in control, how come it's turning out like this? Struggle with that. And then I go back to my favorite Bible book, the book of John. It reminds me that there are 7 miracles in the book of John that show how God has total sovereignty and what he has sovereignty over. And then I'm comforted. I'm no longer fearful because he has taken care of all of that. I think of the first miracle, which was turning water into wine. They had a problem with quality. They had water, but they wanted wine. And so they asked God, who's in charge of everything, and he said, sure, I can do that. I do that all the time in the vineyards. I turn the water into wine every summer, every year. I'll just speed up the process a little bit. It's not a big thing for God. He can do anything with quality. If we don't have the right quality, he can fix that. It may not be the way we think he should, but he has the ability to make all things turn into good if he wants to. The second miracle is you have thousands of people, and as the pastor that spoke to us from Gospel Outreach said, this is a Middle Eastern situation. It probably was like 20,000 or maybe 25,000 people ready to eat. What do we have? Well, five little biscuits and a couple of fish. Quantity is not a problem for God. How many stars are there? How many grains of sand on the ocean? He prays, we have enough for every helper to have a huge basket to take home to share with other people who weren't there, tell them the story of how God can provide. A third one. This is getting closer to our problems. God has power over space and distance. Well, God's up in heaven. I'm down here on earth. How can I expect him to do anything for me? Well, a nobleman's son was sick at home, and the nobleman comes to ask Jesus to, can you come with me to my house to heal him before he dies? Well, Jesus didn't go there. Did that mean the son was not healed? No. He didn't need to go. He had the power over space and distance. It's no less power for him to communicate with us from heaven as it was for him to heal the nobleman's son when he was on earth. Or the problem of time. Anybody ever run out of time? Feel like so much has gone so fast, I'm just wheeling from the spin. What if you had been lying beside the water for 38 years? You hadn't been healed. You'd tried. You'd probably gone to all the doctors. They didn't know what was wrong. You had a friend, maybe, who tried a couple times to throw you into the water when it rippled. God is sovereign over time. He created it. He made time. He's above time, but he made time for us. It was no biggie for him. Do you want to be healed? Okay. Can be healed. Or natural law. It's interesting to me that what do they call natural law? Things like hurricanes and natural disasters, earthquakes, unexplainable ones. What do they call them? Acts of God. Isn't that a misnomer? Well, God can control natural law. The disciples were in a boat thinking they were going to drown in this storm. Jesus was asleep. He wasn't worried. When they wake him up, he says, "Peace. Everything is still." And they were already at the other side of the Sea of Galilee in that very instant. A wonderful miracle. Or chance. How come some children are born with Down syndrome? Or some people can't have children? Or some children turn into criminals and spend their life in prison? Those seem to be apparent chance. The man born blind, whose fault was it? That's what the leaders wanted to know. Was it his fault that he's like he is? Was it the parents' fault? Maybe they did something wrong. And Jesus said, neither. It's just so the glory of God can be revealed. And he says, you like to see? Okay, you can see. It's apparent chance, apparent bad luck. God has power over chance events and death, the biggest problem of all. We can't do anything about death, but God can. Every time Jesus went to a funeral, he never got to speak because there was always a resurrection. Death is not a problem for God. So when I find myself getting crazy after going to the doctor three or four or five times and having three surgeries in a row, or some of you who have gone to the doctor and they say, oh, that's going to take some time, or I need to send you to another specialist, or sorry, we don't know. We just don't know. When I'm trying to control my own environment, what do? I panic. I said, do you know a good doctor? Who should I go to? Should I take this medicine or not? I could pray and trust that God will make all things work together for good in my life. I'm not in charge of that department, which makes me think, what should I do every day? I should live every day as if I'm God's child. And I should probably pray the Lord's Prayer instead of the three-year-old's version. Thine is the kingdom. Thine is the power. Thine is the glory. Forever. Amen. Which means, that's it.